Last year, the world's 9 nuclear-armed states spent over $82 billion collectively on their nuclear arsenals. Now, that is a dramatic increase from the previous year and shows that despite the calls to de-arm, states have continued to invest and modernize their arsenals. At the top of this list is the U.S. spending $44.2 billion on its nuclear weapons. China is second at $11.7 billion, and Russia is third with $8.6 billion. But why do countries need so many missiles, and what are the chances that they end up being used in nuclear conflict? I'm Christy Yai, and you're watching The Cost of Everything, where today we're going to be discussing the economic ramifications of a nuclear escalation. Countries continue to stockpile nuclear missiles following America's lead. America justifies its 3,800 warhead arsenal under the theory of deterrence, sending a message that U.S. retaliation would be so awful that it shouldn't be provoked in the first place. But for practical purposes, there is no reason for this massive arsenal. Once you've dropped a couple of nuclear bombs on a city, a couple more will just make the rubble shake. Building nuclear weapons is expensive and requires technical expertise. Nuclear weapons have two basic parts, the warhead and the delivery system. Now, first, to build the warhead, the most important component is enriched uranium. The fissionable isotope uranium-235, which makes up less than 1% of natural uranium, must be separated from uranium-238, which is the more common isotope. The uranium needs to be refined to a concentration of at least 80% to be considered weapons grade via a gas centrifuge process. A nuclear bomb needs about 15 kilograms of enriched uranium to be operational, and 1 kilogram of uranium-235 costs about $15 million. Now, possessing fissile material is not enough, though. Next, a country also has to master design and manufacture of a bomb. Now, this is a significant hurdle as there are delivery system and detonation devices, as conventional missiles cannot carry the extra weight of a nuclear warhead. The U.S. has bombs that can be delivered by aircraft or air-launched cruise missiles and submarines. These delivery systems are more expensive, with systems like the Minuteman land-based missile costing over $50 million. The cost of deploying one land-based nuclear weapon would be roughly $85 million. The Trident submarine-based missile costs $140 million apiece. And finally, the B-2 stealth bomber air-launched missiles cost roughly $270 million. Now for more, let's bring in activist and journalist Patrick Matza. So, Patrick, given the path we are on today, do you think that we are ratcheting up tensions, or are we still trying to keep everything at a low simmer so it doesn't come to a head? And do you think it's even possible to keep everything contained so that we don't come to a head?
Well, when you look at the pathway in the Ukraine war, it seems that both sides are on an escalation path. Neither side seems willing or able to get off that escalation path. So it's very concerning. And how far it goes is anyone's guess. We know that there are NATO troops, US troops, training in Romania right now, in Poland, close to Ukraine. If in any way they cross the border into Ukraine, all bets are off. I don't believe that nuclear war is necessarily going to break out. The Russians have many military options right now that don't involve nuclear weapons. They have only used a portion of their military power. And they have an interest in not using nuclear weapons because it would strain their alliances with China, their friendly relations with countries of the global south, such as India and Turkey. And they really don't have an interest in setting off a nuclear weapon close to their own borders, where the radiation would simply blow over back onto their own people. However, there is a danger in that many times in the past, we have come close to nuclear war by miscommunication, misconception. There is what we have just noted, the 60th anniversary of the Cuban Missile Crisis, where it was negotiated through diplomacy, the removal of Soviet missiles in Cuba. We had another incident, which is less well known, which I've written about recently at the Raven blog, which is the Able Archer incident of 1983, where the Russians, the Soviets, thought the US and NATO were preparing a first strike on the Soviet Union under the cover of a nuclear exercise mimicking nuclear war. And they were prepared to strike at the least sign that the US was ready to launch its weapons. We've had incidents in our US nuclear alert system where there have been false alerts based on a war games tape being placed in the computer, or a failure of a microchip, which in this current environment, if there was a false alert showing nuclear missiles going over the pole from either side, it could trigger a nuclear war. So that's my greatest fear is war by miscommunication, by misconstruing the other, which is why whatever our differences are with the Ukraine war, we need to be talking to each other. We need to make sure we're in contact with each other so we know, each side knows the other's intention.
If there is a limited nuclear war, where could it be and what would the economic costs be?
I don't think there can be a limited nuclear war. And I think it's just foolish of us to think there can be. War games consistently have shown that it's hard to stop once you start. That once you start on an escalation pathway, it's hard to stop. And there is this phenomenon with the ground-based intercontinental ballistic missiles, with the ground-based bombers, of use it or lose it. If one side feels the other side is ready to attack or believes it is under attack, it has to launch its missiles and get its bombers in the air quickly or they will be lost, especially true of the missiles. This is a matter of minutes decision. So that makes it very dangerous. So even the possibility that the policymakers of both sides actually do form their policy on the basis they think there can be a limited nuclear war. But if we have even the smallest potential that a so-called limited nuclear war could escalate, we shouldn't be planning for that. We shouldn't be thinking about that. So I would say that the cost of any nuclear war is incalculable. But we can see flashpoints in Ukraine. We can see flashpoints around Taiwan and China. Again, you know, we look at war games that have been conducted by the U.S. Navy around supposedly defending Taiwan from China. They always escalate to nuclear. So we can't really think in terms of a limited nuclear war. We should ditch that. We really should, all the nations should adopt a no first use policy, which states that the only reason we have nuclear weapons is to deter other people from using nuclear weapons. That's really the only good use for a nuclear weapon.
And how much is spent building and researching new types of rockets and nuclear weapons?
Well, that's about, you know, there's about $80 billion. Actually, it's more like $82 billion annually go to research, building, and the maintenance of the nuclear arsenal around the world. Of that, about half, about 44 billion is US. China is second at about, I think, around 17. Russia's comes in third. That, and the US also is engaged in a what's called a modernization of the strategic triad, which is a new missile submarine, a new nuclear bomber, and a new ICBM. The Congressional Budget Office says we will spend this decade from 2021 to 2030, $634 billion on that, and averaging about $60 billion a year. So it sees an escalation of US expenses. The modernization will go beyond that if it continues, and the total cost of that is projected to be about $1.2 trillion. And of course, we know with military stuff, it always escalates. It always, the costs always blow up. So who knows where that stops? $1.5 trillion. Needless to say, we have a lot of other needs in the US. We could be spending that money on affordable housing, fast rail, transit that works, water supplies for communities, but instead we're spending it on an entirely new nuclear triad.
Has any useful research or technology come into the marketplace from work on advancing nuclear weapons?
Well, yeah, I mean, we, you know, a lot of money has been put into nuclear weapons. And so, yeah, I mean, if you look nuclear power, in as much as you consider nuclear power valuable, is a product of the nuclear weapons complex. It started, the first nuclear reactors were to make bombs. And that's a fact of nuclear power, is that any nuclear reactor is a potentially the waste coming out is potentially useful for making nuclear weapons. The fuel cycle going in is potentially useful for making nuclear weapons. So that's one reason why lots of people have questions about nuclear power. Missiles, space missiles to launch into space, yeah, they came out of military research, ultimately looking at creating missiles to launch nuclear weapons. Some of the original mainframe computers were created by IBM under contract with the government to manage the early warning system and the nuclear system. So we have had technology spinoffs from nuclear weapons. I mean, we could have obviously directly invested in those technologies, probably at lower cost, and still have had all the benefits of them. But sure, you spend a lot of money, you should get some other benefits than being able to blow up the world.
And how long does it take to recover from a nuclear war? We're talking about rebuilding population, cities, infrastructure, as well as environmental damages. And would there be any changes in the environment that would be permanent?
Well, what is not taken into account in nuclear strategies is something we have known about for a long time. We've known about this since 1983, that you blow up enough nuclear weapons, it will throw a cloud of black soot into the atmosphere. That will shield the sun and cause a global cooling back to ice age conditions, which will crash agricultural production in many parts of the world and result in billions dying of starvation. So even if millions or tens of millions die in the initial exchange, it would result in the death of billions by starvation. So there's really, you know, what you're really looking at is the collapse of civilization. What we found in recent years, studies have shown that we would experience a nuclear winter, not just with the full nuclear exchange by the major powers, US and Russia, but the nuclear arsenals of India and Pakistan are enough to set off a nuclear winter. It would not be as large a nuclear winter, but it would still result in deep cuts in agricultural productivity for a decade. I mean, you could see a couple of billion people die. And again, with all that, you know, you're really talking about something that at minimum stresses civilization and probably collapses it. So it really is insane, I would say, to continue to maintain nuclear weapons. I believe we need to abolish them entirely, because really the risk is that if we have nuclear weapons, they will eventually be used. And if they're eventually used, it will result in an escalation scenario that brings about a nuclear winter and at least a deep setback for human civilization, which who knows how long that would take to recover. Decades, centuries, we don't know, but the risk is simply unacceptable. We really need to get rid of these things.
Thank you so much, Patrick Mazza, for coming on today. And when we come back, what would a world look like in the aftermath of a nuclear war? The clock is ticking, but don't go away.
Western countries are very concerned that China might be sending Russia lethal weapons as a way to help Russia's military campaign in Ukraine. Personally, it's my just personal view. I'm very suspicious of that. I don't buy that. It contradicts what I see the basic logic of behavior pattern of the Chinese state.
Welcome back to The Cost of Everything. Today, we're analyzing how the world would look like in the aftermath of a nuclear war. Now, besides the immediate destruction of cities by nuclear blasts, the potential aftermath of a nuclear war could involve firestorms, a nuclear winter, widespread radiation sickness, and loss of much of our modern technology due to electromagnetic pulse disturbances. Our history, all the accomplishments and achievements we've made in technology, gone, as most tech is kept in data centers and cloud hosting hubs. Not only that, but EMPs would disable hospitals, water treatment facilities, food storage facilities, communication, and cause power outages for months or even years. As of 2021, humanity has about 13,410 nuclear weapons, thousands which are on hair trigger alert. Every nuclear country is currently undergoing modernization of its nuclear arsenal. Most bombs today are tens or even hundreds of times as powerful as the bombs dropped in World War II. Detonation of something like that would render the local ecosystem virtually unlivable. It would take less than a tenth of a percent of the explosive yield of the current global arsenal to bring about devastating agricultural collapse and widespread famine. These stockpiles of nuclear weapons around the world have sucked up government funding, diverting money that could have been allocated to healthcare, education, disaster relief, and other vital services. So now let's bring in Colleen Moore, Advocacy Director and Women's Cross DMZ, to talk further about the cost of a potential nuclear war. Looking at the destruction of Hiroshima and Nagasaki 77 years ago, how does that compare with what the potential destruction today might look like with the more advanced nuclear capabilities?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, looking at the atomic bombings. I mean, technically, the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki were technically limited nuclear war, but I mean, generations of victims have suffered. And like you said, now we have bombs that are multiple times over bigger than those atomic weapons that were used on Japan. So while I don't like saying that there's a thing at such as limited nuclear war, because any usage of a nuclear weapon would be absolutely devastating and have devastating consequences, not only for that population that a nuclear weapon is used on, but it would also be very widespread and affect people around the world as well. And as you pointed out, what many are worried about right now is that we're in an even more dangerous situation now in the Cold War than in the Cold War in many ways. And one of those reasons is, as you stated, that our nuclear-armed countries continue to modernize their arsenals. We have much bigger and more advanced weaponry than we did 77 years ago. And, you know, even though the world has dramatically reduced arsenals overall, many risk reduction measures have eroded since that time. So many guardrails have been removed, especially under the Trump administration. There was the INF Treaty, the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, which banned the U.S. and Russia's land-based ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, missile launchers with short and intermediate ranges, and the Open Skies Treaty, which allowed gathering of information about military forces and activities. Both those treaties are gone, and dialogue is not happening between the largest nuclear powers. You know, relations are deteriorating, obviously, between the West and Russia with Russia's invasion of Ukraine, great power competition between U.S. and China, escalating arms race and lack of dialogue on the Korean Peninsula. So it's a very dangerous situation right now because of all of those reasons.
Now, apparently the official justification for the U.S. using the bomb on Japan was to cut the war in the Pacific short, avoid an invasion of Japan, and save hundreds and thousands of American lives. And Truman even went on as far as to say that he believed that it saved Japanese lives as well. What do you make of this response, and is it justified when the destruction was so catastrophic?
Yes, I think that is a very typical argument that is made. I think there's a lot of arguments against the ultimate use of atomic bombs on Japan for that reason. I think there's a lot of military arguments that, you know, the Soviet Union was entering the Pacific theater a little bit more at that time, that the war could have ended sooner rather than later. I think the argument that justifies the nuclear attack on Japan is very overinflated. And I think the consequences of the use of the atomic bombs on Japan is so much more far-reaching than they thought it might be, or maybe they knew that as well. But I think just the generations of victims that have suffered, nothing, I don't think, warrants that kind of response. And I think that is why working for the abolition of nuclear weapons is so important, is because of these consequences. It's not just there's no such thing, like I said, as limited nuclear warfare, because the consequences are so far-reaching. There's nothing that can really be contained to an area because of radioactive fallout. And they continue to experience these effects even to these days over multiple generation. So nothing warrants a response, a nuclear response.
Thank you so much, Colleen Moore, for your insights today. In the event of a nuclear war, there will be no winners, only losers. And after the dust settles, the global food system would be obliterated and over 5 billion people will likely die of hunger. A study analyzed the amount of sun-blocking soot ignited as a result of nuclear weapons, and this would decimate crops and render agricultural lands unfit for production with contamination. Crop declines would be the most severe in the mid to high latitude nations and include major exporting countries such as Russia and the U.S. Now, over the span of 2 years, more than 75% of the planet would be starving. The ozone layer would also be destroyed by the heating of the stratosphere, producing more UV radiation at the surface, drying out the land, and killing off huge swaths of wildlife. The world has come close to nuclear war several times, and while the ramifications are known to all, The risk of escalation is still present as there is a revival of the Cold War mindset known as mutually assured destruction. The once unthinkable prospect of nuclear conflict is now back within the realm of possibility as the horrific memories of Hiroshima and Nagasaki are fading. And it's ironic that so many are worried about carbon emissions and climate change when the more immediate threat is the potential for a nuclear disaster, which would render all attempts to save the planet a moot point. The best solution for the world is to ban nuclear weapons. But while the five-year-old UN Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons has been ratified by 66 nations, none of the 9 nuclear states has signed. I'm Christy Eye. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you right back here next time on The Cost of Everything.